in Jackson, Michigan, on June 2, 1853, I had given John Loughborough an 8-page record in pencil of the vision I had seen a few days earlier while with the Tyrone Company of Adventists. I told John he could keep the pencil copy if he would make me a copy in ink. The vision included information about a self-appointed evangelist who was trying to introduce herself to the new believers in the state.
Ellen, do you know where in Michigan this woman lives?
No, I don't, John, and I don't know her name either. I was shown that although she professes great holiness, she and the young man she travels with have broken the seventh commandment.
Yes, I read that. And you wrote that when she's reproved, she'll only say, "The Lord knows my heart."
That's so, but I don't know where or when I'll meet her.
On June 12th, James and I and our party met with the believers in a barn outside the town of Vergennes. After James had talked for a few minutes, I took my turn at the speaker's desk.
"Be ye clean that bear the vessels of the Lord. It is not God's way to call a woman to travel about the country with any other man than her husband."
She's talking about Mrs. Alcott and Mr. Pease.
That must be.
But Sister White's never met either one of them. It's her first visit to Michigan.
"That woman who sat down a short time since near the door claims that God has called her to preach. She is traveling with this young man who just sat down in front of the desk, while this old man, her husband, God pity him, is toiling at home to earn means which they are using to carry on their iniquity."
"What iniquity?"
"Mrs. Alcott's a preacher.
Maybe they're not as good as they seem."
"She professes to be very holy, but God has shown me that she and this young man are guilty of violating the seventh commandment."
"Is it true?"
"Oh, Miss Alcott's standing up.
She's going to answer Sister White.
She'll deny it whether it's true or not."
"The Lord knows my heart."
Mrs. Alcott's influence was broken as a result of the vision and my reproof. Later, both Mrs. Alcott and Mr. Pease admitted their guilt. It was on this same trip that James and I first met the believers in the little wilderness village of Battle Creek.
"The brethren in Battle Creek have given us a warm welcome, Brother Hewitt."
"Yes, I think just about all 20 of them are here, Brother White. We're all mighty glad you and Sister White could come."
"You know, if the brothers and sisters remain faithful, they might create quite a company to represent the cause in this village."
During that summer of 1853, the U.S. government negotiated with 18 Indian nations to open up 13 million acres for settlement in what would become the Nebraska Territory. Meanwhile, James struggled through illness to write his book, Signs of the Times. In the fall, he and I made our usual preaching tour to Maine, with a special stop at the Howland home.
"And will I get to ride Charlie Horse? How big's that, son? How big is the yard? Do you have pumpkins in the garden? I drew a picture. I'll go get it for you."
"Oh, Francis, you and your parents have done an excellent job of caring for Henry. He's as happy and healthy as we could possibly desire."
"And he's a well-disciplined, praying boy. We can't thank you enough."
"It's going to be hard to say goodbye to him. But it's time he was home with his parents and his little brother, Edson."
That winter of 1853 and 1854 and the following spring, I suffered greatly with heart disease and with a painful tumor on my left eyelid that affected my vision. I sought the advice of a well-known physician who offered free consultations.
"Mrs. White, you're in a dangerous condition with disease of the heart. You'll die of apoplexy before that swelling on your eye shall break out."
"I've been aware that without speedy relief, I must go down to the grave."
"Two other women have come to me with the same disease, but your condition is more dangerous than theirs. It can't be more than 3 weeks before you're stricken with paralysis.
Indeed, in 3 weeks, I did suffer a stroke. In those days, they called it apoplexy. Even after group prayer, it seemed I would surely die. But the Lord had other plans.
Mrs. White, the swelling's left your eye and your heart's normal. I'm amazed. I didn't expect to see you again.
Yes, indeed, Doctor. And my eyesight's fully restored, and I'm completely free of pain.
Madam, an entire change has taken place in your system. But the other two women I told you about are dead.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you may as well go home. You don't need me.
Thank you.
Her case is a mystery. I don't understand it.
I was healed this time, but Lumen Maston, the print shop foreman, was not. After a prolonged battle with tuberculosis, he died on March 1st, 1854. I was pregnant again, but that didn't stop me from accompanying James to Michigan that spring.
You know, Ellen, the past few days I've been thinking about Wisconsin. I wonder if we should make a trip there before we return to Rochester.
I think we should, James. Only a few have labored there. Waterman Phelps, J.H. Wagoner.
And H.S. Case, before he became offended at the reproof you gave him, and C.P. Russell last year when we visited Jackson.
I wish I never had to give such testimony. It hurts me as much as those who must receive it, James.
Don't you feel bad about those two? They were ready enough to accept your visions when they were accusing Sister Palmer, and you said she had indeed been overly harsh with her troublesome neighbor.
And she confessed her error.
But when God showed you that she had not used the word she was accused of, and that Case and Russell were being overly harsh with her, they suddenly decided the visions weren't from God.
And that makes me sad, too. But yes, we should go to Wisconsin.
We decided to take a train from Jackson to Chicago for the first leg of the journey. After a season of prayer at Dan Palmer's home, we went to the station to catch the 8 o'clock train. John Loughborough went with us.
The trunk of books is safely stowed in the baggage car. You two can find a seat now.
Good. Let's look for a car with high back seats so we can let the backs down and get some sleep. James?
Oh, I'm sorry, my dear. I was thinking of something else.
What's the matter? You look troubled.
I feel, well, strangely in regard to going on this trip.
You've said that several times today. I must confess, I feel uneasy, too.
If we didn't have some important speaking appointments, I'd call the whole thing off, but people are expecting us, so I suppose we'd better continue.
Here, let me carry your carpet bag, Sister White. Now watch your step. Up you go.
This car has high back seats, all right, but they all appear to be taken. Do you see an empty place anywhere?
No, I don't. Let's try the next car.
I see some empty seats in the middle of this car. Unfortunately, they're not high back.
We'll have to make do. But I just don't feel right on this train.
I think my misgivings have upset you. But I wish I could feel better about this trip.
Well, that's my signal to leave. Have a good trip. God bless you.
Goodbye.
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 Ellen? You'll be more comfortable if you take off your bonnet.
I think I'll leave it on.
Well, at least let me hang up your carpet bag.
No. James, I just don't feel comfortable. I feel as though something were going to happen.
I must admit I have the same feeling. It's so strange. But the believers prayed for us before we left. We must put our faith in God and try to relax.
Ellen, are you all right? Are you hurt?
No, no, I'm all right. Let me open up the window and see what's wrong.
Look out there. There's been a wreck.
Oh.
The engine's off the track. Lying on its side.
Oh, how terrible.
But our car seems to have been uncoupled from the rest of the train before the accident. And the car we first looked at is a splintered mess.
Oh, James.
There are people lying beside the tracks. It's horrible.
Oh.
I'm going outside to see what I can learn. It seems an ox went to sleep on the track. The engine didn't have a cow catcher, so it derailed when it hit the ox.
I see fire on the track.
They've built a bonfire from pieces of wreckage. And some of the men are running up the track with torches to warn the next train to stop.
But what I don't understand is why our car is separated from the rest of the train. We're not even near the wreckage. James, what are you doing?
I'm carrying you away from here. The ground is marshy, and I don't want you to take a chill.
James carried me to the main road, and we walked a half mile farther to the nearest house. There, a messenger quickly hitched up a buggy and drove the 3 miles into Jackson to fetch a doctor to the scene of the wreck. A number of passengers were killed, but the uncoupling of our car saved James and me from injury. I was later shown that an angel had been sent to protect us.